Welcome to the inaugural podcast of the World Affairs Council for Inland Southern California, presenting visions and voices on complex global issues. Our guest today is Dr. Scott Nelson, who's an orthopedic surgeon who has dedicated much of his career to humanitarian service. Since graduating from Loma Linda University School of Medicine in 1996, Scott and his wife Marnie have lived and worked in the United States, the Dominican Republic, and in Haiti. He was a first responder to the Port-au-Prince earthquake in 2010, and in 2018, he and Marnie returned to Haiti to help create a training center providing high-quality orthopedic services to the Haitian people. In 2014, Scott was nationally recognized for his humanitarian service by receiving the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons Humanitarian of the Year Award. Scott, thank you very much for being with us today. It's great to have you all the way from Haiti.
Great. Thank you very much, Ron. It's great to be here with you.
So just to start the conversation, what drew you to the path of global medical humanitarianism?
This is something that started early in my life, and maybe it was even passed down through my genes. My grandfather was a surgeon in Africa, in the Belgian Congo, and he spent about 25 years of his career there running a similar mission hospital to where I work right now. And when I was 8 years old, my family went and visited my grandparents out there, and I saw my first operation. And I can't say that it was a decision that I made right at that time, but this really planted some of the seeds that would affect the decisions that I made as my education and my career went on. And as I went through medical school, I really wanted to go overseas and serve in a underserved, remote, austere environment where people really weren't able to access any care. And I maintained that focus in spite of being discouraged by lots of people and lots of opportunities that were out there. And luckily, I was able to marry a very supportive wife who has been on board with this, and it's been really a family affair.
Wow. So what are some of the unique challenges that you face practicing medicine in Haiti in particular?
Well, in Haiti, the economy is very challenging here, and it's difficult to provide high quality care to a population that has no resources and be able to sustain that on an ongoing basis. In Haiti, 80% of the population is unemployed. The government has very little revenue. There's very little infrastructure here in the healthcare sector, as well as other sectors of the government. And most of the population is in survival mode. Everybody is just trying to survive for themselves. And it creates a lot of challenges in the work environment, challenges for sustainability, challenges for communication, challenges for working together. But by working with the local people here, by being here on a longer term basis, having relationships with people, speaking the language, and developing trust on both sides, we're really able to create something at our hospital that is not possible at other places across this country.
I imagine when you say that 80% of the population is unemployed, I imagine you mean kind of formally, they're not formally employed, but surely people have to do things to get by and survive. And what are some of the ways that people make ends meet there in Haiti? Is it an agriculture-driven economy, or how do people get along?
Yes, certainly, that's the case. When we say 80% unemployed, those people are out pushing wheelbarrows, selling bread, selling beverages, farming, selling vegetables. They just don't have a formal employment, which really handicaps the effectiveness of the government because they don't pay taxes. Many times they don't have an electric bill. Electricity is a big deal here at our hospital. We have to generate our own power 24 hours a day. Once in a while, it will come on every couple of weeks for a few hours. But this creates a lot of challenges, a lot of waste in the system that is already challenged for resources, and a lot of additional work, additional ecological factors in many cases. And everything is just harder. And oftentimes in the U.S. and this year and the pandemic, we look at ourselves and all the challenges that we're having, but there's many other places in the world that will help us put our own challenges in perspective.
So, you know, of course, here in the States, we have lots of issues with people lacking health insurance. I would imagine health insurance for most of the population in Haiti is simply non-existent. So when people get ill, what exactly do they do? Where do they go? What is their first, choice or preference? And what is the range of options they might have?
We live in a city, the capital city of Haiti, which is Port-au-Prince. It's a city of 3 million people, and there's probably about a dozen hospitals that are 50 beds or more. We fall in that category here in our own hospital. So some people will seek some care at hospitals if they have some resources. About 6% of the population have healthcare insurance, but it's not the type of healthcare insurance that you and I are used to. It really reimburses for very minimal amounts of services. A large portion of the population either doesn't seek any care at all, or there's some spiritual leaders in the country that provide some home-style remedies. And there's also the general hospital, which is sort of the default trauma hospital for patients, and they can go there basically and get admitted for free, but then there's no services that are offered without having to pay for them. You have to pay for your medicine, you have to pay for your IV fluid, you have to give something for your operation and your implant, and so many patients are there waiting to have interventions performed.
And the doctors there in Haiti are mostly, I'm guessing, from Haiti itself, but you also have international doctors such as yourself. Are the medical professionals who come to Haiti from elsewhere mostly from the United States? Or, you know, I was once spending a summer in East Timor, and I was struck by how many of the doctors there were actually from Cuba. Do you have Cuban doctors in Haiti? How does it work there?
Yes, there's quite an international population historically that have been involved in Haiti through various nonprofit organizations. There's Cuban doctors in Haiti. I don't have personal acquaintance with any of them right now, but in the past I have. The Doctors Without Borders organization operates about 5 hospitals in our city right now. And there's been a lot of international aid in Haiti, especially after the earthquake. The consistency of that is quite variable, and the effects of that are also somewhat variable. There's several training centers, universities in Port-au-Prince that include medical schools and even postgraduate residency training. I can speak for the orthopedic surgery programs, which there's 2 of them here in Port-au-Prince and a 3rd one up in the northern part of the country. And they train doctors, but then once the doctors end their training, it can oftentimes be very difficult to work because patients don't have enough money to pay the hospital for services. There's no implants available. There's no equipment available. So we have doctors who are trained who want to help, and we have patients that need help, but there's no economic infrastructure to actually make that happen. In fact, one of the recent residents that finished his training here in Haiti now works at Subway Sandwiches in Orlando because he got a visa and he can make more money working at a fast food restaurant in the United States than he can as a surgeon here.
Wow.
And that's in spite of a lot of people suffering and really needing healthcare. And it's not that he went there for selfish reasons. It's because he's here, their hands are tied. They want to help people. They might even do operations on a regular basis for free, but the patients still are required to have a certain amount of money to even get into the hospital to make that possible.
So with all of the challenges that you face providing quality medical care to people in Haiti and partnering with the doctors and physicians there to make that a reality, here's a burning question for you, which is on everyone's minds, not only in the United States, but around the world, which is COVID. This global pandemic we face. How has the COVID crisis struck in Haiti? What has been the response of the government and the people there to the pandemic? And you know, what can we perhaps learn from it?
Yeah, this is a very good question, Ron. And it's actually, we have some good news to tell you about there. Haiti has largely been spared from this pandemic. There are so many challenges here, and there's been historically so many natural disasters. Many people know about the sixth deadliest earthquake to happen in world history in 2010 that took the lives of over 200,000 people in this country, and then hurricanes and cholera, and the population here is just very vulnerable to this sort of thing. There was a lot of fear when the pandemic started breaking out, and everywhere in the world, as you and I both know, especially here in Haiti, because the population density in this country is more than 10 times higher than what it is in the United States. People survive by selling and buying food and outside markets. You can't order things delivered to your door, and there's close contact with lots of people crowded in living conditions, much more so than in our own country. Public transportation here, it's very crowded. You have 15 people riding in the back of a pickup truck together, and it was really feared that COVID would have some devastating effects on this population. But as the pandemic has evolved, Haiti fortunately has been spared statistics that have been largely spared from the pandemic. At this point, on beginning of September 2020, Haiti so far has, and we've only had 214 deaths here. And compared to the United States, this is only 1/25 of the prevalence of cases diagnosed and 1/30 the death rate that we're seeing in the United States.
Do you think that any
of these numbers are reported as absolute numbers, but you need to take the population and you need to divide these numbers by the population. And so when you do that, you can see how much less it's affected the population here. And many people have postulated different reasons for that. Some of them have said, we don't have near as much testing here. There's a lack of infrastructure in our healthcare system. People are probably dying in the country and never coming to the hospital and never being recorded as COVID deaths. Certainly we can explain some of this by that, but I don't know if it really explains a death rate that's 1/30 of what it is in the United States, which is not far away. On March 19, the president of the country shut down the airport, and it was closed for most of 4 months. There was some precautionary measures that were attempted, requirements of wearing masks, which were largely unfollowed, recommendations for hand washing and social distancing, which were really not possible given the lifestyle and the practices of the population here. My personal opinion on the possible explanations for this are, first of all, the fact that only 5% of our population in Haiti is over the age of 65.
Wow.
And the average life expectancy in Haiti is only 63 years old, as opposed to the life expectancy in the United States. So if you do survive to the age of 65 in Haiti, you're usually pretty strong. And the second reason, which is related to that, is that people in Haiti from a very young age are exposed to almost every pathogen imaginable out there. Many times kids are running around barefoot, they're in the dirt, there's improper sewage systems here, and they build a very robust immune system when they're exposed to all these things. This is just like you and I working out at the gym every day, we get strong muscles. If you study a lot, your brain functions more efficiently. And if you're exposed to a lot of pathogens that actually don't kill you, then your immune system is most likely to become much more robust.
That's fascinating. So if I could just interject a question here, do you see the same kinds of results or outcomes in some of the surrounding countries or the next door countries as well?
Yeah, interestingly, in the Dominican Republic, which is our next door neighbor, we share the island of Hispaniola with the Dominicans. The population over there is similar to Haiti, which is approximately 11 million people in each country. And the Dominican Republic has 100,000 diagnosed cases as compared to the 8,000 that we have here in Haiti. Their death rate has actually not been very high. They've had about 1,800 deaths in the Dominican. I say it hasn't been very high compared to other countries around the world that have diagnosed 100,000 cases. But and in Haiti, again, we've had 200 compared to 1,800 cases on the other side of the island. Most of the life expectancy in the Dominican Republic is a little bit more than it is in Haiti. The urban population lives much differently than they do here in Port-au-Prince. In the Dominican Republic, there's high-rise buildings, there's much more air conditioning, much more living within closed spaces, whereas here in Haiti, the crowded living conditions are always more or less outdoor situations where there's lots of fresh air. You know, nobody knows all the answers to these things, and we can postulate that maybe more people wear masks in the Dominican or more social isolation. The opinions about the pandemic are varied, and people are as passionate and varied in their opinions about the pandemic as they are about religion. And we all still have the same statistics that we look at. Yeah. Many people read the same religious books, but they all have different opinions about it. And ultimately, it's really important to respect each other's opinions about it and realize that our own opinions, they're all hypotheses. These are possibilities. But when I look at some of these different factors and can appreciate some of the health aspects that we have here in Haiti, I really do think they are important factors in the relative sparing of this population from the pandemic.
You're talking about the factors of like the outdoor living, the fresh air, the earlier exposure to numerous kinds of pathogens that builds up some kind of a resilience or things like that?
Yes, all those factors. Certainly, I don't know that we particularly say in most situations that we should just try to expose ourselves to everything out there in order to be healthy.
Yeah.
But it probably does speak for the notion to not be overly precautious about getting exposed to certain things. And I tried to raise my two boys with that in mind, and food falls on the floor in the house, and they were little kids. We let them pick it up and eat it, and we took them out. We weren't overly protective. I worry certain amount about kids that are growing up in 2020 that they might be lacking some of the immune factors that are important to prevent disease as they grow up and mature. The fresh air in Haiti, important. There's much less incidence of diabetes. There's less incidence of obesity. There's less smoking in this population. And they get a lot more physical activity in their typical lifestyle than we do in more developed countries.
That's incredibly interesting. And I hope for all of our listeners, gives people a sense that it's not, the West doesn't just have things to give to Haiti, but can learn some lessons from Haiti as well. What you're saying gives me some personal hope here, because when I was a kid growing up in Zimbabwe, actually, I joke now with my nephews and nieces that my main toy was dirt, actually, because my folks would just send me outside and, you know, you play outdoors and run around barefoot. And maybe that's the way kids should be raised in some way. But of course, there's challenges too. So in your hospital environment, when you're working with your colleagues and peers and admitting people and things like that, are you taking any particular precautions related to COVID, or have you decided to more or less just continue on more or less as usual, like masks and things of that nature?
I was actually on a short trip to the United States earlier this year when the border of Haiti closed down. And so I actually spent about 4 months in the United States during this pandemic. It wasn't by intention at all, but in coming back to our hospital, there were some policies that were developed as far as mask wear, and the fear here, just like everywhere else in the world, has probably superseded the amount of reality that's out there, at least in some cases. I shouldn't say that as a blanket statement, but there still are some people wearing masks, even in the general population. In general, out on the streets here, You might walk 3 or 4 blocks before you see somebody wearing a mask. The guards at our hospital gate are now in the habit of requiring people to wear masks when they come into the hospital, put them on when they're going through the gate, and many times they don't really stay on too long, or they're wearing them hanging from one ear or under their chin and various things like that. The weather here is extremely hot and humid, and I'm a surgeon, so I wear a mask all day on many days of work, but when I'm out around the hospital and in a place that I'm in the heat and humidity, I typically find it a bit annoying to personally wear a mask, and it's hard to convince myself that when there's free airflow around and with the extremely low incidence that we have of COVID here, being a relatively young and healthy person, that I really am putting myself at much risk for getting the virus or spreading the virus when I'm not wearing a mask. And here in Haiti, your risk of dying from a gunshot wound is at least twice the risk of dying from COVID. And your risk of being in a car accident is 5 times the risk of dying from COVID. So we have to kind of put all these things into perspective. There are some staff at our hospital that still are routinely wearing masks, but it's starting to fade. And overall, people aren't overly concerned about COVID. We've set it up so now if a patient gets admitted to our hospital as a suspect case, they're put in an isolation room and all precautions are taken. But we're not routinely taking precautions for every single person that comes in with a broken leg and other unrelated complaints.
I mean, hearing you talk, it reinforces for me the idea that there's not really a one-size-fits-all solution for many of the problems that we face in the world. I was recently talking to a friend of mine who is a medical doctor working on an ICU unit in Texas that deals exclusively with COVID cases. And her experience is dramatically different from yours. She's feeling that if there's even a marginal increase in cases in her part of Texas, that it will overwhelm the health system that she's involved with. And so it makes you realize the complexity of the disease and, you know, the need for probably multiple ways of addressing it and confronting it. Well, I really appreciate your helping to put some of these questions in perspective, Scott, all the way from Haiti. And, you know, one of the missions of the World Affairs Council is to just raise awareness of what's happening around the world, and also to, in some way, make it relevant to people living in the United States, and specifically in the Inland Empire, where our chapter is based. And so maybe as a parting question, I could ask you if there are things that you think people in the Inland Empire in California can do or should be doing in the midst of this crisis to make a difference, not only locally, but globally. And, you know, I take a lot of inspiration from another medical doctor who's done a lot of work there in Haiti, Paul Farmer. And Paul Farmer's organization, Partners in Health, is, I think, also a great example of great work that's being done in kind of collaboration with people from different parts of the world to just improve the lives of human beings. And so, yeah, what would be your takeaways for people all the way over in the Inland Empire in California, Southern California, which you know very well, as we think about this problem together?
Yeah, that's a great question, Ron. The pandemic's definitely paralyzed all of our lives in various ways as far as being efficient and in many ways collaborating, and it's made it more difficult to work overseas, to have the supplies that you need when you need them, to get the appropriate expertise. Everything's just become more difficult. And I think whatever we can do to maintain those connections between what's going on here and what we have at home is very important. Sometimes there's not a single answer of how to do that, but I think there is one common denominator that's going to help in a number of ways around the world in this pandemic situation, and that is to take a personal responsibility for health. Most of the focus on preventing COVID and helping the pandemic go away is by trying to avoid it and putting masks on, trying to hide from the virus. It's still largely unknown if every single one of us is ultimately going to be exposed to this virus. And I've personally taken more of the approach that it's very important to maintain your health. And I've learned this from the Haitians and this environment in which I work. Get out in fresh air, exercise, eat healthy, don't smoke, lose weight if you need to, get good rest, drink lots of water. These are principles that date way back to the foundations of Loma Linda University, where I've worked for a number of years and continue to be affiliated. And for me, these particular issues are not really controversial, and they have a lot of additional benefits. So even if they're not going to be the most effective thing against fighting COVID, they're still going to be beneficial to do. And so I think we should not only try to comply with various parameters that have been put upon us, but think about our personal health and what we can do to take personal responsibility for that. And ultimately, it will benefit ourselves.
Your words inspired me momentarily to go outside and go for a jog until I looked out the window and saw the air quality here in California where the fires are burning. But that's an issue for another day.
Yeah, there's lots of challenges out there. Life is just getting harder and harder to live.
It is, but we thank you very much for the work you're doing to make life better for the people in your part of the world there in Haiti. And stay well, stay safe, Scott. We really appreciate it and appreciate the conversation.